My name is Isabella Housladen. I'm 13 years old. Today is November 26th, 2018, and I'm speaking with Mike Housladen, who is my uncle. We're recording in Louisville, Kentucky. What is your full name?
My full name is Michael Alexander Housladen, and I am a lieutenant in the United States Navy, and this is my interview.
What is your date of birth?
September 19, 1980.
What jobs have you had in your lifetime? Include the military positions, if you can.
Yes. I began as a ranger at Philmont Scout Ranch, where I taught Boy Scouts how to backpack. I also was an intern at Actors Theater of Louisville as a stage manager. I worked at Kroger as a deli worker and chef's assistant for about 4 months, and then I worked at Best Buy in sales, and then a supervisory position, and then as their lead delivery driver, and I worked there from 2002 to 2009, at which point I was commissioned as an officer in the United States Navy, and my first posting was to the USS Fitzgerald, where I worked as the electrical officer and communications officer. And then I went to the USS Mesa Verde, based out of Norfolk, Virginia. And there I worked as the Combat Information Center officer, or SICO. From there, I went to Naval Postgraduate School as a student and got my master's degree in national security affairs in Europe and Eurasia. Then I worked in administration as the policy action officer at Surface Warfare Officers School. Then I went to Japan, back to Japan, to work on the USS McCampbell as the chief engineer. And now I am in transit to Little Creek, Virginia, where I will be working with the Mark VI Bravo Company, and that will be with what they call the Riverines, or River Squadron 4, which works in what we call the Brownwater Navy, so coastal and river waters on smaller boats.
Neat. That's a lot of stuff.
Yes.
Tell me some stories about your siblings.
Well,
as well as who, like, the names.
Yes. So the oldest is Bob, Robert, who is your dad, who should require no introduction, but he is an accountant. And also as the oldest brother, I would say he is arguably the most responsible of the brothers in our household. And then there's James, who is the second oldest brother. I'm third, and James works, well, primarily he works in IT, and he actually was born with only the left arm. His right arm, he was born with it without the portion just past the elbow, which, to be honest, I don't even notice anymore because he deals so well without it. But when he was born, the doctor said, apart from that, he's fine. It's, you know, just a standard birth defect that sometimes happens. It's not, it's unusual, definitely, but not unheard of. And so he had to learn to do a lot of things the hard way. You know, dealing without having that second hand, people don't think about it. But even minor tasks like tying your shoes or peeling a banana, you have to plan ahead a little bit and think creatively, so he got very good at thinking outside the box. In fact, he, and we're not still not sure how he did this, but he managed to earn his swimming merit badge in the Boy Scouts, despite having only the use of one arm. He just learned to compensate, so we're all very proud, obviously. And then the youngest brother is David, who is currently working as a pet care specialist at PetSmart, And he's he's got a heck of a mind on him. He's very, very intelligent. And then we also... So our parents divorced, and then both of them married elsewhere. So I also have a stepbrother and a stepsister that I'm very, very fond of. Ben, my stepbrother, he's working with security systems, doing quite well for himself. And then there's Jessie, my stepsister, who is an accomplished marathon runner, as well as a, you know, a housewife, which I still think, and believe me, that's, I'd be happy to be a house husband, but I still think that the people that stay at home in a relationship and work with the kids, I know my mother did that, and she was definitely the hardest working person in the family. But those are the siblings.
Okay. Could you talk about the Japanese tsunami that you helped out in?
Yes. So this was in 2011. It was, I believe, March. We had just finished a Goodwill visit. This was on USS Fitzgerald, which was based out of Yokosuka, Japan. We had just finished a Goodwill port visit to Hokkaido and to Sapporo for the Sapporo Snow Festival, which was a lot of fun. But we had just left that and gotten back to Yokosuka. It was actually a work day. I was on board the ship, and the ship began to shudder. The engines weren't on, but it was as if the engines were backing down hard. It was that sort of sensation from the earthquake, which was a major one, causing a lot of damage to Japan's structure on its own merit. One of the six lines that held the ship to the pier actually snapped, which they're very heavy-duty lines, so they had to put two more lines out to compensate. And that night, we all got messages and texts saying to come in the next morning on a Saturday and be ready to get underway. So we were one of the first responders when the tsunami hit in northern Japan, mainland. And the Fukushima nuclear reactor troubles also complicated matters, because then you had the scare of radiation, which still exists to this day, concerns. There are people I've met in California years later that would say, I wouldn't trust sushi right now because of all the radiation, even though the radiation really isn't that much more than you would get from going out for a suntan. But there was a major scare for radiation, so there was one night while we were responding that we had to go ahead and put on our radiation gear with all the lead shielding parts and wear that overnight, which was not comfortable. Let's see. Also, so during the rescue efforts, our primary mission was actually going to sea, to the east of where the tsunami hit hardest, and looking for wreckage, as well as for people. Unfortunately, we did not have the opportunity to actually rescue anyone. We did come across several bodies, which is never an easy thing. The Japanese Coast Guard was also present, so we would call them to pick up those people, those unfortunate people, whenever we came across one, and they were there promptly. But that's still an important job, because those families need and deserve that peace of mind. Be that as it may, my assistance in Operation Tomodachi is probably the thing that I'm most proud of in my career, just because it was very important. It was a chance to actually go out and help people, which, when you're used to the tedium of the day-to-day, it's nice getting a chance to actually participate and give something back to people.
Hmm. Can you tell me a bit about your childhood and what you were like as a child?
Oof. Well, I was... Yeah, I to an extent, it was very happy, but I don't think childhood is an easy thing in today's society either way. You know, I had a wonderful life at home, and of all my brothers, I was probably the fun one. I had a lot of fun, you know, making my bigger brother smile, running around the house, playing with toys, the usual stuff. We didn't really have as many video games back then as there are today, but I enjoyed that as well. Let's see. Beyond that, it was a reasonably happy childhood. There were obviously adjusting to school and getting into that. It's never terribly easy. I didn't quite hit my stride being social with people until really college. I was a bit of an awkward child, but that happens. I did eventually get into Boy Scouts and also martial arts, which Boy Scouts is a great program, and I understand now they're making it just Scouts and opening it to females as well, which is a wonderful thing, I think. But it teaches you a lot of skills that are just good to have in general, whether it's how to use a compass, how to safely handle a firearm, how to administer first aid, all things, you know, CPR included, all things that you may or may not use as an adult. But I have found myself more often than not saying, man, I'm glad I learned this in the Boy Scouts. And then Taekwondo is a wonderful thing to learn a little bit of self-defense, control, restraint, and obviously it's a good workout.
So Boy Scouts has helped you out in the Navy?
A great deal, yes. In fact, it came in to practical use about 3 weeks ago. I was at Expeditionary Combat School, and they were teaching us how to properly use a compass with land navigation, which you'd think we would already know, and everyone knows more or less how to look at a compass, but we're used to, or I'm used to, navigating at sea with the Navy. But the Boy Scouts, it was all about navigating on land, and that skill definitely came in handy.
Can you tell me about one or two people who have been the biggest influences in your life?
Well, one of them would have to be when I went to officer candidate school. Our gunnery sergeant, Gunny Anderson, was a great influence. The most important thing that he taught me is there's only one thing in this world that nobody can take from you. They can take a lot of things, almost everything you have, you know, through various means. But the one thing people cannot take from you is your integrity. That's something that only you can take away from yourself. They can take everything else away, but that's the one thing that you can hang on to.
Can you tell me one of your happiest memories?
Yes. When I was very young, I was working with the, where I was in the Louisville Boys Choir, and through them, I got the opportunity to play Tiny Tim at Actors Theater of Louisville in A Christmas Carol. And it was a big deal for me, sparking my interest in theater, which, you know, also lasted through college. Getting to be up on stage in front of all those people, getting to learn those parts and memorize those parts, it was, frankly, a lot of fun. I think it was also nice messing with the staff members, because I've always had a way with words, and so I was memorizing their lines, most of the other actors, before they had them down. It was a good time. I also recall, well, my parents both were very supportive in that time period. Both my dad and mom went to a lot of the performances. Mom was constantly driving me back and forth. So that was a very good time in my life.
Do you have a nickname, and how did you get it?
Actually, at Best Buy, I had a nickname. They called me Logan when I worked at the Best Buy, the one on Shelbyville Road in town here. because when I first started working there, I had very long sideburns. And so the first thing my new boss said to me was, "It's Wolverine!" And it stuck. Ever since then, I was Logan, and I didn't mind, because they had about 15 mics, and they had no Logans, so it was a distinctive name that was entirely mine. It was also nice, though, because if Logan got in trouble, I could say, "Well, I'm Mike," and, you know, I could avoid all the trouble that came with that.
What was the worst thing you did as a kid?
Oof. Worst thing as a kid. Well, that's not in your list of questions, Bella.
Yeah, it is.
But worst thing I did as a kid would have to be when I was very young. I caught, and I was too young really to know any better, but it was the day after Christmas in 1986. We were living in Denver, Colorado, and the family dog, we had a dog named Duchess. Be that as it may, I learned that, well, at first I woke up and one of my toys, a brand new Transformer, was missing. So I went looking for it and found it next to the dog's bed, chewed to pieces. Needless to say, I was upset and angry, and not knowing anything about, well, anything really, I kicked the dog. Yeah, not my best moment. She was fine, and actually nobody else noticed the incident, so it never came out until I was an adult, basically. But, yeah, not a proud moment. In retrospect, I feel pretty bad about it, but, you know, when you're six, you don't really know right from wrong all that well.
What were some of the reasons you joined the military, and how did you choose your branch of service?
Well, there were a few reasons. First and foremost, you know, I do love my country. And I think at the time, we were hurting for people to join the service. It's still less than 1% of the population that ends up joining the military. But there were other reasons. Some of them were selfish. I had a college degree that I wasn't using. I was working at Best Buy as a delivery driver. And so getting some sort of job where I could make a difference and get well compensated and reset my career to an extent. Three things that I've managed to accomplish while in service. As far as my choice of branches, at first I looked at the Marine Corps only because they kept pestering me, sending me brochures and pamphlets, and I said, you know what, that would be pretty awesome to be the Marine Corps. But my stepbrother Ben that I mentioned earlier was also in the Marine Corps as an enlisted Marine, and he said, absolutely not, don't go in the Marine Corps. You'll learn to fire a gun, but that's about it, and you'll be miserable, and they have the worst food of any of the branches. You know, look at Air Force, look at Navy. The bases are better, the opportunities are more. I don't mind hardship. I've lived in the woods as, you know, a ranger at Philmont Scout Ranch, and I have done all kinds of hard work in my life. But at the same time, my goal was to open up more opportunities. So, after some careful consideration, I went into the Air Force and Navy branches. It took me about 2 years to get them to accept my application, partly because I think some of their administration was lacking. They lost my application about 4 times. But finally the Navy gave me a call back and said, hey, in 2 weeks we need you to come up to Officer Candidate School in Newport, Rhode Island, and earn your commission, which I did.
Nice. What was your basic training for the Navy like?
Basic training was Officer Candidate School, and it was a rude awakening. I was physically prepared, but mentally I was ill-prepared for the difficulties involved. Gunnery sergeants and Officer Candidate School, you have Marine Corps Gunnery Sergeants training young naval officer candidates. So gunnery sergeants are trained to remove you entirely from your comfort zone, to break you down to an extent, which is necessary. It's kind of like working out. You have to break some of the muscle in order to rebuild it. So they work to break you down physically, but also mentally, to get you ready for this new life. And it's not easy. The amount of precision they require in preparing your uniforms, the amount of cleanliness required in your hallways, the physical strain. And then I will say that being yelled at by a gunnery sergeant is one of the more terrifying experiences that a person can ever go through in life.
Mm-hmm. What are some of the things you remember about adapting to military life?
Lack of sleep is a big one. When you first get on a naval vessel, actually, I'll tell you about my first day, really on Fitzgerald. First few days. So I flew, this was in July, July 22nd, I arrived in Japan for the first time to check into the ship. Flew there from Louisville by way of Chicago. And upon my arrival, I met some of my shipmates in a berthing that had been assigned to the other junior officers there, the other junior ensigns, I should say. And then we got a few days, basically, to get ourselves ready to get underway because the ship was leaving on the 24th. So I was still jet-lagged when we got underway. So now I'm jet-lagged and seasick, and they tell me, okay, you have the mid-watch tonight. So you're on watch from about 10 o'clock at night until about 2 in the morning. So we get underway. I head up for my first watch at the prescribed time, and we are standing on a very dark bridge, learning some basic things about conning or controlling the ship's movements through the water, because a junior officer, the first thing you really learn is how to con the ship, where you're telling the helmsman, come left, come right, go straight. Essentially, you're a backseat driver, only you're in charge. You do so under the supervision of the officer of the deck, who is also a junior officer, but usually with a year or so of experience that knows what they're doing up there and will call the captain if they have to. So, having finished that watch, I returned to the berthing to find that my rack, where all my stuff had been stored for the voyage, the lock had been cut open, the rack had been opened, and everything I had brought with me had been moved to a different rack. Because some of the chief selects, who were E6s becoming Navy chiefs, had been moved into the same berthing and wanted to live together, and they thought I was not underway. This was an awkward moment because no one is supposed to break into anybody's rack or cut open any locks without the master-at-arms and the commanding officer's approval, none of which had been obtained. So it was also awkward for me because I didn't want to be seen as soft with the chief's mess, as they are the senior enlisted on board, so I couldn't let it slide. But I also didn't want to be seen as a jerk, you know, and barge in there and start shouting at people. So I had to find some sort of middle ground. Ultimately, I went to my chief, the one that was working for me, and told him of the problem. And he said, oh yes, they already told us, don't worry, we're taking care of it in-house. And I was not privy at all to the details, being that the chiefs don't always share everything with the officers, as is their prerogative. But I will say that those chief selects were very, very tired for the next few days. I think it was a fair thing.
What is it like on a Navy ship?
It's different. In some ways, it is uncomfortable. There's no Wi-Fi, for one thing, when you're underway. And really, we're talking about two different kinds of lives here, because when you're in port, the ship is basically an extended work office. You go in there to work, and most days you go home when work is done. Although you do have a rack where you keep some of your stuff, and you are ready to get underway with very short notice. And we also have, you know, showers and bathrooms and all that. When you're not on the ship in port, you're at home. But then there's the underway time when you're on the ship the whole time. When you're underway, there's no Wi-Fi. There are some computers in public areas available for use with the internet, but there's very little privacy, very little alone time, and almost never do you hear silence on a ship. It's never quiet. You always hear some kind of humming or rattling, shaking of the ship, pipes, water flowing, engines turning, and that's actually a very good thing. After a while, you get used to it, and it's comforting, but also, when you're hearing those things, and it's not super loud, but it is constant background noise, when you're hearing those things, you get so used to it, you're not aware of it. When those things stop, when you hear nothing, when it's silent, you'll be awake immediately, because you'll know something is wrong with the ship. We've probably lost power, lost steering, lost other systems. If you hear silence on a ship, it's a very bad thing. And almost immediately your response should be to figure out where you need to go as fast as possible, get a flashlight, providing that there's no emergency lighting, and get to your repair locker.
And what is the repair locker?
Repair lockers, they have a saying that every sailor on a ship is also in damage control. Repair lockers are where you coordinate efforts to save the ship. If the ship has a minor or major casualty, whether it's flooding or fire or anything else that goes wrong, you will man up one or all of the repair lockers and respond from there, and that's where you go to get all of your firefighting tools, your hoses, your fire axes, your personal protective gear, flooding equipment, and some of that too is hung in the P-ways outside, but that's also where you coordinate efforts for that area that you're in, is from that repair locker.
All right, that's all the questions.
Outstanding. Well, it's been a pleasure.
Yeah. All right, we're done.